You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a very unique special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Carcino, and we've got a special guest with us here tonight. I might be slurring because we are in the alley between First Avenue and some train tracks after the Seahawks have advanced to the Super Bowl, and our special guest is...
Christopher Smith, and that... thing is the Port of Seattle is what you're talking
interesting.
About.
Interesting.
That is the Port of Seattle.
I might say some incorrect things. Well, I just learned there. Incorrect things. I have been drinking since 11 a.m. and I am holding a large bottle of...
Well, don't hold that up while the police car goes by.
Andre Extra Dry Champagne.
That's a just relatively small bottle.
Be cool while the police car goes
misdemeanor.
By.
Misdemeanor.
All right.
But we're going to... Okay, keep driving, please. Don't slow down. Oh, why are they stopping? Why are they stopping? They don't have to stop. We're just recording a podcast here. We're not driving anywhere. Okay, anyway, the police have actually stopped. But
they're
let's
moving.
Okay.
It's all right.
They're moving along. The police have moved along. Nobody's going to be arrested.
We'll probably be editing that out.
But let's talk about this football game.
It was a very exciting football game. A very nerve-wracking football game, let's say.
Right out of the gate. Much energy going on. All hyped up, trying to get people to be quiet. First play of the game, Russell Wilson scrambles, tries to do a spin move, and loses the ball. Turnover.
That didn't work out
right
very well.
Away.
It was a rough entry to the game. Really.
You know, we knew what would happen in the end, so I don't know. Like,
all's well that ends well?
Yeah. I mean... I'm really excited, really, really happy about the Seahawks winning the game. But I do remember that moment, and I thought to myself, we're still going to win this game. This is an issue. You know, there are a lot of issues there. The first issue was that the Seahawks were not on defense first.
Major issue. Jim Harbaugh has consistently deferred when he's won the toss, did that down in San Francisco as well. And yeah, it definitely gets the Seahawks off their game.
Both of the teams want to be on defense first.
I mean, that's their stronger units, first off. And also, it's just a rhythm and a comfort, I think, for the Seahawks with deferring and knowing they're going to have that first possession in the second half.
And honestly, in the first half, the Seahawks offense were not able to get much going throughout the whole first half.
Not really. It was pretty much just the one big play to Doug Baldwin that allowed them to score.
And neither did the 49ers offense, really. I mean, they got that. Where was that ball at? What they got, like 18?
Inside the red zone, so yeah. So they went nowhere with
and
that.
All they got was a field goal.
They had three and outs. The only drive on which they scored, on which they had a first down, I should say, in the first half was the drive where they ended up scoring, got the Richard Sherman holding on third down to extend the drive.
I think we both believed while being at the game that was a ridiculous call.
It was a tight call. Fortunately, it was not an indicator of how they were going to call the game.
And the ball was not really particularly catchable on that play.
And obviously, that was the main way the 49ers hurt the Seahawks in the first half was with Kaepernick's legs. And something we talked about on the podcast,
but didn't expect
to that extent.
The only thing that the 49ers had going for, honestly, the entire game, until maybe the second or third to last drive, was Kaepernick running the ball.
Absolutely. They struggled a lot on third down throughout the day. Could not get anything going on the ground. That was an area where I predicted they would have some success, and you were correct that the Seahawks were going to be able to shut that down.
Nothing going running the ball. Kendall Hunter maybe had one run for about 12 yards. Frank Gore had nothing going for him.
The Seahawks obviously made that priority number one and did a terrific job with it. Then on the other side of the field, you know, they wanted to run the football, didn't do it in the first half. Second half, come out, immediately hit several big plays with Marshawn Lynch that culminates in the 45-yard touchdown, something like that. I think it was the longest run against the 49ers in the Jim Harbaugh era.
Really? That's interesting. I didn't know that was the case.
There were so many Lynch runs where I was like, oh, man, just short. And then they moved the chains.
It was like, yeah, there was a lot of plays like that.
I'm like, how did he got that? All right.
The run that scored the touchdown was the play that I really think turned the whole game. You know, I think that...
Tied the game up.
It tied the game up, and it really meant that the Seahawks were in the game, and I think after that, I was like, we've got this. I'm not concerned about this game.
It was like, start over from there. Like, from there, stay on top of the defense.
Which they didn't.
Honestly, the 49ers coming back out, if I have to give credit to Bill Barnwell and his momentum perspective, the 49ers coming out and scoring a touchdown immediately after that was really surprising, considering how much momentum the Seahawks...
He actually tweeted, apologies to Seahawks fans. That was just trolling people who do believe in momentum for them to immediately get that touchdown drop.
And it was the loudest. I want to play, because I recorded quite a few voice memos, and I'll record these maybe at the end. I have not listened to them.
And a waste of memory on your phone.
Yes.
That was something to try. So that drive, what really stunned me about that drive, again, a couple of big plays to keep that alive, but the 49ers did something that the Seahawks have not allowed all season long, which is a deep pass across the middle. And Earl Thomas was in position, just one of those situations where being 5 foot nine or 5 foot ten instead of 1 inch taller, he was that close to tipping the ball away.
You said that you wish Earl Thomas was a little tiny bit taller.
Cam Chancellor was like looking down at Earl Thomas when he's on the ground. And I was speaking as Cam Chancellor, like, why couldn't he, you know, be a couple inches taller?
It's true.
I mean, if he was a couple inches taller, maybe he never falls to the Seahawks.
You know, honestly, after that, the Seahawks defense really shut everything down, and they were a little bit taller. You know, the interception that Chancellor had and the play that ended the game, which we'll talk about in a second, were plays where the defense was that extra bit taller and was able to interrupt what Kaepernick was trying to do.
Also, at least one of those plays where Byron Maxwell deflected a pass away from Anquan Boldin. I thought Maxwell had a really nice game in coverage.
The entire defense, honestly, all around, there was nothing that didn't go well except for the contain with Kaepernick in the first half.
Yeah, that broke down in spectacular fashion. On the play where he had the big run, KJ Wright was spying him,
and
just
KJ
missed
Wright,
the tackle.
Did KJ Wright play after that?
I can't say I recall that he played.
So, spoiler alert, we're going to the Super Bowl. And spoiler alert.
Whoa! Oh!
KJ
Wright. Some people
Wright
had no idea.
And Percy Harvin should...
I didn't even know this.
Percy Harvin and KJ Wright should be healthy for the Super Bowl.
And the good news is you really, really come out with any new injuries. Doug Baldwin got banged up, had to go back to the locker room. I don't know if you guys knew that, what was going on.
Oh, yeah, we saw Baldwin get hurt.
Yeah, you saw him limp off.
Avon Barksdale.
But back in for the next drive and then ended up making huge, huge plays.
Everything Doug Baldwin did was great. Honestly, for this game, I thought Baldwin and then also the receiver who we predicted before this week would be huge in this game was Jermaine Kearse. You're giving me a high five. Jermaine Kearse, you and I each predicted Kearse would have a big catch. I said Kearse would have a big catch and Zach Miller would have a big catch. Miller didn't pan out, but Jermaine Kearse had the catch, which scored the touchdown on a fourth down, which basically won the game. Yeah, there was a long pass that Russell Wilson hit perfectly, but there were two defenders there. There was a corner and a safety.
Yeah, there was two times where they just missed it. That play, and then also earlier in the game, they ran play action. Kearse beat his man, but the pass was just overthrown by Wilson. Yeah.
You know, I thought that Russell Wilson played very well, or at least passed the ball really well, and he was hitting those receivers in stride when he needed to. And I also think that the receivers were there at the same time, and it was something that the Seahawks could have done more often, honestly.
I mean, everything that we talked about, you know, in terms of the concerns about the last few weeks, it really regressed to the mean. The third downs, not an issue. He did a great job of finding Doug Baldwin, Golden Tate. It was really only when pressure came on Russell Wilson, he struggled a little bit, gave too much ground. The intentional grounding was a major play that, it looked like it was going to end the drive. Then it didn't because of the fact that you got the completion to Zach Miller.
I said, I don't think he got the ball to the line of scrimmage.
It was an interesting thing.
You were on that, I think, before the referees were.
And Tristan was like, no, he got it.
He got the ball to the original line of scrimmage, but he didn't get the ball to the... It was second and six, right, on the play. But he didn't get the ball. He got it to where the original line of scrimmage was.
I see.
But he didn't get it past that. So that 4 yard difference that they got on first down meant that it was an intentional grounding. And honestly, it's something that I think the Seahawks have to be a little bit concerned with. You know, we know who we're playing in the next game.
Well, the 49ers defense so good that I just don't think Russell Wilson, he is trying to scramble out of things where he needs to just throw the ball away.
Yeah, I mean, one of the consistent themes throughout the day, the 49ers linebackers, give them all the credit in the world, they're so fast that you cannot outrun them laterally. So Marshawn Lynch will try to, you know, cut a run outside, and not happening now.
There was a play where it really looked like, or a few of them, where it really looked like Marshawn was going to be able to bounce outside and get some yardage, and he only ended up with 1 yard or no gain.
There was a lot of holes, though, I feel like he missed, too. He just stepped stepped the other way, if he would have stepped, you know, and stepped the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think Marshawn is probably more likely to go outside than inside, and maybe a lot of holes were inside.
Yeah. They did a better job in the second half once Elvin Bailey started coming on as a sixth offensive lineman for the Seahawks.
That was Elvin Bailey, number 78.
Yeah, that was really a game changer.
Number 78 is eligible. Number 78
often
is
that
eligible.
They mentioned that.
So that was, he was in on the touchdown play, for example. He was in repeatedly on that drive where after the Michael Bennett fumble recovery, where they were unable to punch it in the end zone, he was in throughout that series.
Being able to score on that turnover.
After the 49ers had the turnover, not being able to score, the fourth down play that they lost yardage on was pretty devastating. Fourth and one from the 1 yard line.
It was a weird situation where for a while there, the Seahawks in the fourth quarter of the NFC Championship game just were unable to snap and hand off the ball, which
I felt like
seems
we were
pretty fundamental.
We were going to go up by two scores.
And that would have basically ended the game.
And if we would have got a field goal, it would have been disappointing.
Yeah.
That's what I was feeling before we fumbled the ball on fourth down. Like, oh, fourth and one at the goal line. All right, got to go for it. If we don't get it. You know, they're backed up.
Yeah, you think that's the worst-case scenario is you're giving them the ball on the one, and instead you give them the ball on the 15. Now, it was some karmic justice because they should have had the ball on that Navarro.
And that was when he threw the interception to Cam Chancellor, correct?
That was. The defense bailed them out in that situation, and then you get the field goal after that drive to go up six and set up basically what San Francisco had decided with their slow style was going to be one final drive to decide the game.
It's true. You know, the Seahawks blew a lot of timeouts before then, which was making me nervous that going into that last possession that, okay, this is going to be the last possession of the game because the Seahawks don't have any timeouts. If the 49ers are able to put together a few first downs, that they did have one timeout.
We had one timeout.
Yep.
If they were able to put together a couple of first downs, the game was going to be over.
You could have had a scenario just like the last San Francisco game where you basically, the game gets taken out of your hands.
But honestly, the difference between hitting a field goal and a touchdown is such a huge difference.
That is a big
difference. Without question.
And you know, I think looking into this game, it honestly reminded me of the New Orleans game. Like, my prediction for the New Orleans game was that the Saints would be driving down the field. Obviously, the Saints have a more potent offense than the 49ers have. That they would be going down the field looking for a touchdown and not a field goal. That they would be looking for a touchdown. They would be down by 4, 5, 6, or 7.
It proved a huge difference because they had to go to the end zone. Absolutely. And that's what ended the game for them.
It really did.
So a couple things I was thinking about during that last drive. Number one.
Panic.
Well, yeah.
How much panic were you feeling? You know what?
Immense. Like, I thought it was over.
I have to say, honestly, I was really nervous that the 49ers would score a touchdown, but I was also very confident in the Legion of Boom.
So two things. Number one, Jason Jenks did a feature this week on Pete Carroll where he talked about a couple of situations. One where he was the head coach of the Jets, and then this year at St. Louis where his team had to make a goal line stand to win the game or they could lose it. And the team comes over to the sideline during a timeout, and he's like, guys, isn't this fun? Isn't this great? Which is just so quintessential Pete Carroll. I wanted to talk about that during
tweet,
the game.
Tweet, isn't this fun? The last drive.
Pete Carroll's thinking this
fun, everybody.
Love your opponents.
It is the most excruciating thing possible to watch this. And
I love Colin Kaepernick. Hey, this drive, I love you, Colin Kaepernick.
Well, how much does Pete Carroll get paid?
A lot. A healthy amount.
At the end of the day, he's still getting a paycheck, and we're still spending our money and getting our hearts broken.
But he also has some measure of control, he feels like, where it's kind of out of our hands, except for the noise you guys can make as the 12th man.
Okay.
But the other thought I had was, this is post-game, actually, is all the defensive players talked about how, dating back to last year in Atlanta, they were disappointed that they let down the offense in terms of allowing that final field goal that won that game. And their motto all season was, put us out there and we're not going to lose. And that was the case in the St. Louis game, and that was the case here.
And you know what? I think
the St. Louis at St. Louis game?
Yeah.
Okay. I agree, and I think that's something that really played out through the whole season, where the defense last year, really, they showed very little at the end of the season, you know? When the Falcons got the ball at 31 seconds and needed a field goal to win the game, we thought they were going to get it. I didn't feel very confident in the Seahawks defense. But this year, I did feel confident in the Seahawks defense.
Last year, it was like wherever that we got last year was going to be satisfying just because we had no expectation.
That's true.
Yeah.
And this year, coming into this year, you know, whoever says whatever, you know, people are like, oh, Seahawks are going to go to the Super Bowl by this defense because we really turned it on at the end of last year. So now it's like we expect that Atlanta game last year. Nobody expected. Yeah. I didn't expect us to.
It was just
back.
All gravy.
And let's talk about that for a second, because I think that right now is still a continuation of that game, honestly. It's an interesting thing because since that moment, it felt like the season, it's been the 2013-14 season since that moment.
Yeah.
When Matt Bryant hit that field goal, the 2013-14 season began.
Well, that's exactly how it's probably been in Russell Wilson's mind.
Exactly. Right? And it's an interesting thing.
And the defense's mind, apparently.
For the defense, for Russell Wilson, for everybody involved, it's...
And even though our offense is really... That's the only thing that bothers me about the Seahawks right now.
What is that?
It's just not really having that, like, putting drive on top of drive
together. But I think they did that in the second half. I mean, I think the red zone is the biggest concern.
There are obviously problems.
Like, I don't like
with
going away
offense.
With zero or just 3 points a lot, you know? Like
I will say, I thought Darrell Bevell called a much better game tonight. One of the things we talked about on the podcast came to fruition, which is using wide receivers in Percy Harvin-like ways, even without Percy Harvin in there. So we saw two wide receiver screens for Doug Baldwin.
I thought there were excellent plays for Doug Baldwin and Golden Tate.
I just, this whole season, like... So much talk about Percy Harvin. He's never played for the Seahawks.
Honestly,
ever.
He's never played for
and
anybody
there's
ever.
So much expectation. Yeah. It's like,
but he was dangerous in the two quarters, quarter and a half he was on the field last week.
The specter of Percy Harvin is very frightening. And I think that, so here's
I mean, that's the crazy thing is we may still not have seen the best of the Seahawks and they're playing in the Super Bowl.
It's
we may still not
have
seen
we haven't. We have not.
Percy Harvin will be playing in the Super Bowl.
Barring an injury during practice.
We don't have to be particularly concerned about the Seahawks health-wise. We're going to be playing the Broncos. I really love that we can kind of assess who we're playing. And the Broncos are going to be without Von Miller. They're going to be without
Kevin
Vigerson.
Their defense
is
not...
Chris Harris.
They're going to be without a significant chunk of their defense. And the Seahawks are literally only going to be without Brandon Browner.
Yeah.
When you start the season...
They don't need it all.
To now... They're without one player, and it's one player who they're not particularly concerned.
Sidney Rice. Yeah.
So a few players who they're not particularly concerned with losing.
Brad Favre said, if we had Sidney Rice and Percy Harvin, nobody could stop
us. Well, it remains to be seen. We still have not seen the two of them together.
If you have a time machine.
Brad Favre said that.
But one of the things, going back to your point about the continuation of the Atlanta game and the differences from that. Pass rush.
We kill it.
Avril, Michael Bennett, you saw their value today.
And you know what? It's a really interesting thing.
Two strip sacks.
We're going to talk about this in probably a couple weeks, where Clemens, you've got... Here's your pass rushers. Irvin, Clemens, Avril, Bennett.
I don't know if I would even count Clemens in there at this point, but yes.
Clemens is not... And I was watching him specifically during this game, and Clemens is not getting the quarterback, right? No. You know... I think Clemens is probably going to be cut after this year, and I think that they're going to go all out to try to retain Michael Bennett.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're
when
probably
when you look
up
at your end positions, you've got Avril and Bennett. That's who you really want to retain.
And Red Bryant.
But we don't have to talk about next year.
I want to mention one other hero on the defensive line. Tony McDaniel had a phenomenal game.
He did.
Was really key to the run-stopping effort.
And it's like a real credit to Schneider and Carroll to find somebody in Tony McDaniel who is a cast-off from another team. But the other thing is, when you look at the game in its entirety, Richard Sherman deserves to be Defensive Player of the Year.
What an amazing
game. They do not...
Had they already voted on that?
I don't know. I think they have already voted. Yes.
When Richard Sherman tipped the ball to Malcolm Smith to win the game.
He practices.
Richard Sherman. Yes. Okay.
Who practices that?
There was a dialogue about Richard Sherman and the whole Legion of Boom.
You know who practices it? The best defensive player in the league.
That's very true.
That's who practices
that. I believe, the only time they threw at him all game. I mean, they're holding top penalty, but that's the only pass attempt.
They were, you know, throwing places where safeties had to come over top, you know, like they were trying to fit it in between, like, Thurman and
I thought their game plan was pretty good in that regard.
I mean, the 49ers had a great game plan. I don't want to fault the 49ers for losing this game, but I do want to credit the Seahawks for winning this game.
And ultimately, a lot of it came back to what we've talked about all year, is the difference between these two teams probably was going to come down to who had home field.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, honestly. But I want to say that Richard Sherman, we've talked about his defensive player of the year season, right?
Yep.
And he made the most important play in his defensive player of the year season on the very last moment in the NFC.
The most important play so far.
That doesn't matter, because they...
But it's just, it's an example of star players step up at the biggest moments. And how can you say that about a quarterback? Okay. But you can.
So, Cortez Kennedy, indisputably, is the greatest defensive player in Seahawks history, correct?
Without question.
Correct?
Yes.
Cortez Kennedy is the greatest player in Seahawks.
Who is there today?
Yep.
Richard Sherman is the number two greatest player in Seahawks defensive history.
I don't know if I'm ready to put him ahead of Kenny Easley based on 3 years. I mean,
I'm sorry, but like...
He's definitely on that track.
What Richard Sherman does, he's the greatest secondary player. And what Richard Sherman has done in those 3 years is so impressive. And Richard Sherman escorted us, tipped the Seahawks into the Super Bowl.
That's true.
Something that Kenny Easley literally never did.
But not without him not playing his best ever. He just...
I mean...
It's an impressive thing, and everybody is involved. Earl Thomas has a claim to this also.
Camp Chancellor with a huge day today.
And it's something that we'll talk about this next week with the creation of the team, where, okay, Richard Sherman doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? Richard Sherman doesn't exist without Camp Chancellor. Richard Sherman doesn't exist without Earl Thomas. You know?
And that's what makes the Defensive Player of the Year debate hard. I mean, I think we all come down on the Sherman side, but there's a case for Thomas to be made as well.
But there's no debate, though, that it should be a Seahawks player.
Number one defense in the league.
Because
people are still cheering because of how excited they are that the Seahawks have reached the Super Bowl for the second time. I mean, wait. Seahawks? We've reached the Super Bowl for the second time. How amazing is that?
It still hasn't really sunk in for me, I feel like.
Not amazing yet until we win it.
Okay. Say what you're going to say. But I want to talk about the difference between this and the previous Super Bowl appearance of the Seahawks.
Well, I was there.
Chris was at the previous NFC Championship
game. I was at the whole season 2005. And that season, our defense, I think, led the league in sacks. Not necessarily a good secondary, but definitely got pressure on every quarterback that we face. But on the other side, like a number one offense, scoring like 40 points a game. There was never a question of whether or not we were going to score points.
It's a strange thing because when you look at the 2005, the playoffs were the 2006 playoffs, correct?
Yes.
When you look at that team, you don't think of them as a particularly potent offense in the same way that you would view the current Broncos offense, right?
No.
Well, not because the Broncos offense right now is the best ever.
Yeah, it's historically
good.
We were probably the best
Seahawks offense ever that year. And
with a solid defense.
And part of it is also the legacies. Like, that was Matt Hasselbeck's undisputed best season. Sean Alexander's undisputed best season. That was Walt Jones's undisputed best season. Like, everything came together for that team.
It is true. But honestly, like, right now, this moment, right? You and I cannot speak to this, right? We were at the house that I rented in Wedgwood watching Kobe Bryant score 81 points, correct?
Yes.
The exact moment that the Seahawks in 2006 won the Super Bowl.
Well, I was watching
not the exact moment.
Steve Smith
it was a little later.
Run a punt back for a touchdown.
Late in the game,
but that got called back. And I was thinking...
That's what I was going to say. So here's a question for you, Chris, which is, being at... And I wasn't there, and I wasn't there, but you were, and you've been at both of these games. What is the difference, climate-wise, between the 2006 playoffs and the 2014 playoffs?
All right, first, I just want to say that NFL, the season, it's just the season of the NFL, 2005 season, 2013 season.
Good call.
In 2005, I had no doubts whatsoever, just because of how good our offense was. Like, no matter what happened, I knew that we can put up points at any time. This year, I get nervous about being able to score points.
But what about defensively?
Defensively?
Or overall?
Overall, I feel like 2013 is a better team overall.
Okay, let's try to do... This is a weird thing, right? Can you channel yourself... I assume that the AFC Championship game was before the NFC Championship game in 2006.
It was the exact same scenario where the game in Denver was first, the game in Seattle was second.
Denver?
Yeah, Pittsburgh won in Denver. It was the exact same...
Who's the quarterback in Denver games at the time?
Jake Plummer.
Oh, Jake Plummer.
Jake the Snake!
Jake Plummer knocked off the New England Patriots the week before.
So you're yourself in 2006, and the Seahawks have just won the NFC Championship, and they're going to play Denver, or they're going to play Pittsburgh, right?
Yes.
And how confident do you feel now versus 2006?
Then... I just assumed we were going to be the champions. Pittsburgh is a wild card team. We have so much offense all year. Like, I was 13. The Seahawks won 11 straight games that year.
They were, particularly unstoppable team
yes,
at that time.
That's what I felt like.
Would you agree with that?
But I never felt that sense of invincibility. I felt like, especially in the playoffs, that a lot of it was just not playing the toughest teams
they
in the
did
NFC.
Not
it was
play
a pretty weak slate. Because that Carolina team, like...
Complicated perspective.
The Redskins beforehand.
Yeah, Carolina won because Chicago refused to double-team Steve Smith. The Seahawks double-teamed Steve Smith, and that was it. Carolina had Jake Delhomme. I look back at their running backs. It was like Nick Going and Brad Hoover were their running backs.
Goings, but yes.
One of them got a concussion that game because Lova Tutupu pounded his helmet into their helmet.
It's a complicated situation they were playing worse teams in 2005, 2006, right? In the playoffs. And the current team is a better team. They're playing better teams. And just in general, they are a better team, right?
Yeah, I mean, that team wasn't number one by DVOA.
This year, we had a little more, more people on our side. More people, believing that the Seahawks are a good team. Like, back then, even though we went 13-3, winning 11 games in a row, when we went to the NFC Championship game and Carolina was coming to Seattle, all they could talk about, as I remember, is like, Jake Delhomme's playoff quarterback rating is the highest quarterback rating of any quarterback in the playoffs ever.
And they were like 2 years removed from the Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've gone to the Super Bowl.
I can't even believe it. Let's bring it to the present day.
I have a recording which I've titled Super Bowl. That's us cheering for Russell Wilson as he takes a knee to take the Seattle Seahawks to the Super Bowl.
Okay. Here's the thing about your recordings.
And Macklemore starts playing. That's the good...
Here's the thing about your recordings, Tristan. One, I thought they were going to sound terrible. Two...
They don't sound
terrible. They actually sound really good.
I thought that was going to be bad, but that was really cool. You know what? We did a lot of hugging everybody. We're going to the Super Bowl. Are you not aware?
I am aware that we're going to the Super Bowl.
By the way, high five. Super Bowl. Boom. Super Bowl. Boom. Okay, we're going to the Super Bowl. Can you believe that? People of the world.
It's pretty awesome.
And we're not just going to the Super Bowl. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
Okay. Now you're going
to learn. But anyway, I was taking... I talked to somebody, and I said,
we're going to the Super Bowl for the last 6 weeks.
He really has. Way too long. So I was talking to somebody that we sit next to, and I was like, I'll see you not next year. I'll see you on Thursday night when we play the Broncos next year.
There you go.
That is not... It's not just... we're going to be playing a game next year against that team. We're going to be playing them to begin the season because we're facing each other in the Super Bowl, and we're going to beat them.
You should be knocking on wood furiously right now.
I should be hugging Chris and you furiously. I think that we're going to win our first Super Bowl. I really think it's going to happen. I think that we've got a better team, and I'm really excited about the opportunity.
So I guess those are your first thoughts on the Broncos matchup.
Chris, first thoughts.
The Broncos offense is so ridiculous, but our defense is so ridiculous, at least in the secondary. But Peyton Manning is so smart. It's really hard to, like, come up with an idea. Like, thank God this is not my job to make a plan.
This is where Dan Quinn and Pico are going to earn their money.
Against Peyton Manning, it's not impossible to come up with a game plan that will shut him down.
I mean, I think a couple things. Number one, that how that game is officiated is going to be really important. I think that'll be a major storyline over the next 2 weeks, that Denver will try to manipulate that to its advantage.
Because we play aggressive, and, if, you know, he could get the refs, if Peyton Manning could get the refs to look certain ways.
It works to their benefit. Yeah. Number two, I'm interested to see how this goes, because we were there and we saw the Broncos in the preseason when Tristan wasn't there in your season tickets. And that was a domination by the Seahawks. Obviously, preseason totally different, not the same level of scouting, not quite the same level of scouting and intensity for the preseason game as the Super Bowl. That's the kind of unique insight you get only on the Pelton Cups. But the Seahawks played really well against Denver in the preseason, so I hope that carries over. And you kind of thought at that point, hey, you know, the deep in the back of your mind, in the recesses, you're like,
this could be a Super Bowl matchup.
But very rarely do you get to see a situation where, particularly in the last 5-6 years, where the best AFC team and the best NFC team get to meet each other in the Super Bowl.
You could just say number one seeds.
And then the other aspect of it is one of the greatest offenses of all time versus one of the greatest defenses of all time.
And so
that's an awesome matchup.
It's a really exciting scenario. Honestly, this is a much better Super Bowl matchup than we've seen in quite a few years.
And nobody is going to play. There's no Jerome Bettis in Detroit storyline that we have to worry about for the next 2 weeks.
There is a Jermaine Curse scoring a touchdown in the Super Bowl storyline, which we're really excited about because I predicted that about 10 weeks ago.
Yeah, but that's not in the national media.
I don't think that's going to come up a lot.
They're not aware of
that. Hopefully they're going to be checking the Pro Football Reference page. I tweeted that out during the game, said it was a good business decision to sponsor
Absolutely. That's $1.10 well spent.
I mean, we should finish up on Jermaine Curse here, since as we have all season. What an awesome story. Local kid, UW product, undrafted, makes a go-ahead touchdown in the NFC Championship.
Scored today. That ball, offsides, free play for Russell Wilson.
Which, by the way, Russell Wilson never draws offsides, and then all of a sudden he draws, like, three critical ones in this game.
Throws it up there.
Perfect play.
And, I mean,
predicting a Jermaine Curse touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Three verticals on that play on 4th and 6 in the NFC Championship. Get rich or die trying.
And Curse is, I mean, obviously, the player of the Pelton cast, right?
Oh, without question.
He's our player.
This is happening.
He's going to score a touchdown in the Super Bowl, and people are going to look at his Pro Football Reference page.
I don't know.
You never said that Jeremy Stephens was going to score a touchdown in the Super Bowl, did you?
Did he?
No, did you ever say that?
Yeah. No, I did not.
Okay, all right.
Jeremy Stephens, I do not feel the same way about Jermaine Curse.
Did you say that Daryl Jackson was not going to get called for offensive pass interference in the Super Bowl?
I don't think that the Super Bowl will play out the same way it did. By the way, we're going to the Super Bowl. Has anybody realized this?
Jermaine Curse is going to the Super Bowl.
We're going to the Super Bowl.
I think that's a good note to close.
We're going to find a way.
We're hugging each other. Bring it in. Oh, my God. What a year it's been. We have spent so much time, and we're finally here. And
it paid off. It really paid off all the time we spent.
Played out the way that we thought it would be. It's been an amazing season. This has been the best football season of my entire life, and I've won a lot of fantasy football championships.
I do have to say that, because I was there 2005 season, this is much different, and this is the best football season of my life.
The best football season of our entire lives.
So I think on that note, thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for listening. To celebrate the greatest football season of our entire lives, and I hope that
thus far
it's capped off with a Super Bowl victory.
Thanks for listening. Go Hawks.
Thank you.